And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and you can always find us at naturalnurse.com. We're so happy to be with you today. So we're going to have a wonderful guest, and we're hoping to start your New Year's off right. So guest today is going to be Dr. Art Caperald. Dr. Caperald attended California State University in Long Beach, California, and focused on an emphasis in human biology. He graduated from the Cleveland Chiropractic College and continued his education with hundreds of postgraduate courses focusing on nutrition, diet, and lifestyle, as well as clinical management and whole food nutritional supplementation. He also functioned as a consultant to an authority on the use of therapeutic and nutrient-dense foods, plant and glandular concentrates and extracts, as well as phytonutrients and phytochemicals. Dr. Art is currently the president of Concepts for Health, a health and healing expert, teacher, and lecturer with over 23 years of clinical experience and thousands of people that have consulted with him for his advice. It has allowed him to develop a unique system that enables people to take control of their health. His professional teaching experience to doctors and the public covers a wide range of topics. On today's show, we will focus on many topics, but also on weight loss, which is the number one New Year's resolution. For finding Dr. Caperald later, you can always go to conceptsforhealth.com, which is his website. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, so there you are. You're online, you're on the phone, and we're able to hear each other just very well. So thank you so much. So I want to go back in time, because you've been doing this, I'll say a little while, because I've been involved in it with since 1964.
Right.
So it's funny how, you know, time marches on.
But when
you were a young man, or even going back into boyhood, what do you think led you to become really focused as your life's ambition and your career on natural medicine?
Well, it's funny. It didn't start out that way. I've always been fascinated with the body, and I've been fascinated with research. And early on, I wanted to get involved in research, and then I started to realize I enjoy interaction with people too much, and I really wouldn't get a whole lot of that in the research arena. And I was in college. I started at a junior college that was close to home, and I just immersed myself in the natural studies and, you know, biology and human anatomy, those type of things, and really was going to become a medical doctor. And so I did some research, and I went and I spoke to maybe 7 to 10 medical doctors, and almost all of them told me not to do it. And I couldn't tell you if it was just the luck of the draw of the people that I chose, but they all said that it wasn't what they thought it was going to be, and so I went into the chiropractic route because I had a lot of friends that were chiropractors. And from that, I was traditionally a straight chiropractor, but I wasn't getting the results that I was told I would get in school. And I, you know, as luck again would have it, I came across one of my first mentors that taught me about a reflex system called the somatovisceral visceral somatic reflex, where organs can actually be the cause of some spinal problems going out of place. And so when I started working with nutrition and focusing on providing nutrition to support certain organ systems, then a lot of the spinal problems would go away. And so I converted my practice at that time to strictly a nutritional diet and lifestyle practice.
So I think in general, one of the things that you shared, which I think is unfortunately true, that many conventional medical doctors, and I know many of them, do not feel fulfilled in their profession. And I think there's several reasons for that. One reason is if they went into it thinking they're going to become a multimillionaire or something.
Right.
The jig is up on that. And perhaps chiropractic physicians who can certainly support themselves, but they don't usually go into it with the reason of, being on top of the financial world, just that they're going to be helping people, and it could certainly lead to being comfortable in life, but that's usually not the motivating factor.
Right.
And then I think beyond that, it's really frustrating in conventional medicine when the word cure is never part of the vocabulary. Their goal is not even to cure illness, it's to manage illness.
Absolutely.
And the managing is about usually nothing more than pharmaceutical therapies and perhaps with more end-stage situations, surgery. And I'm not saying that those can't be useful at times, but they're definitely not the answer that leads to wellness, nor does it even look at what is the cause of the imbalance.
Correct. You're absolutely right.
So I imagine, as a profession, and I know it's true with many physicians who I interact with, they're just not that happy because they're not helping a lot of people. They see their patients get, basically very often worse and worse over time, and then they have to add in additional medications, et cetera. It's just not a really uplifting profession, not financially and not from a fulfillment perspective. Not true for everyone, but I would say that's what I hear from many people as well.
I agree with you 100%.
So now you went on, to chiropractic college, and beyond that, not all chiropractors actually focus as much as it looks like you have on nutrition and high-level supplementation.
Correct. There's a handful of, when I was in school, there was a lot of docs that believed that you can adjust the spine and it'll correct everything. And back when chiropractic was discovered in 1895, that may have been the case because there was real food, there was less stress, there was a lot of different factors involved. But there's so many parameters that that create health now that adjusting the spine is just part of it. And I had friends that thought they could eat anything they want and do anything they want as long as they got adjusted, they would be healthy. And it's so, I can say this because I'm not putting down the chiropractic profession, but it's not true. There's many, many more things that are involved in that, not just adjusting the spine.
And where did you continue your studies in terms of the nutrition that you went into and other, you started out in biology, so you must have an interest in actual studies and science.
Yes, that's kind of the limiting step in the work that I do. So a lot of people look for studies to verify if this supplement's going to work or if that supplement's going to work. The problem I've found is that in medical studies, they can only usually have one variable. And so they use a synthetically derived supplement, which is missing many, 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 many cofactors that are needed for that specific vitamin to work properly. And so you're not going to get the same results as you are if you're using a whole version, a whole food version of that specific vitamin.
So do you have an example of that?
Vitamin B is a really good example. So
great.
There's a handful of different, vitamin Bs, right? And, let's pick thiamine. And thiamine deficiencies, if you look in, there's a handful of books, and unfortunately I don't have those at the tip of my tongue right now, but they go through and they list the symptoms of thiamine deficiency, And if you hold that up against a list of, depression and, anxiety issues, they almost copy each other. But if you give the person just thiamine, it's not going to work. It has to be a whole food B complex that has everything in it to support the entire process. Because there's, as you well know, when you get into enzymatic functions, there's cascade effects that are way down the line that if you give one specific part of that nutrient, it's going to affect everything else past it, and not always for the good. Vitamin C is another good example. A lot of people take vitamin C, but the whole food vitamin C complex has many, many, many more nutrients than just vitamin C.
Right, like if you got vitamin C, let's say, from a citrus fruit, it's going to have a vast array of very specific bioflavonoids, such as hesperidin and quercetin, and you may not find that in something you purchase on the shelf that just is ascorbic acid, which can also be called vitamin C. It won't have those cofactors. And even if there are some of them added in, it may not be in the ratio that occurs in a whole food.
Right. And, then you have the other aspect of that, even if they're going to add it in, maybe there's things we haven't figured out yet or don't know how to test for yet. And so I always talk with some of my colleagues about that. What's the new vitamin of the month? Because, they're coming up with something new that they found, and it's already been in a whole food form, but now they're able to process it and make it from something, and therefore they can sell it.
Right, of course. And then also, sometimes it has to do with the fact that something can be patented. And once it can be patented, then it's often actually pulled off the market. There was a big to-do with Reggie's Rice because the drug companies already offer a very similar patented medication with statin drugs. And so they did not want Reggie's Rice to be sold as a dietary supplement because it would compete with the patent drug.
Right.
So there's a lot of different kinds of interferences and legal considerations as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when we look back in the early years, and you say nutrition, the early years, what are you referring to?
Okay, that's a great question. What a lot of people don't know is that many of the nutritional pioneers were dentists. And at the turn of the century, what they started noticing is that they were getting a dramatic increase in the amount of cavities in the population. Because prior to the industrialization of food, the average number of cavities for people were one cavity per 1,000 teeth. So they started getting an increase in cavities, and they started seeing an increase in acute and chronic disease processes. And so one dentist in particular, Dr. Price, in the 20s and 30s, he actually used his own money and he traveled around the world looking at indigenous cultures to see what they ate and what their health was like. And across the board, as long as people ate food that was local to them, that occurred in nature and didn't eat processed food, disease and tooth decay were almost non-existent. And so
the pictures in his books are amazing. He went around to so many
amazing
indigenous cultures, Dr. Price. His work is excellent.
Exactly.
And he really was able to document that a lot of these indigenous cultures, he was a dentist, so he was focusing on oral health, did not have the kind of cavities and degradation, even with older years, that we find in what we might call advanced cultures.
Right, right. Exactly. And then you have Dr. Royal Lee, who was a dentist, very smart man. He had hundreds of patents under his name, and he ended up starting a company called Standard Process, which is a whole food supplement company that was started in 1928 or 29, I don't remember. And he found that many of the problems that occur within health occur from food, and so he actually started this company because his mother was sick, and he put together specific foods and made it into a pill form so he could help his mom, and he ended up helping her. And so Yeah, it's just a lot of people don't understand that, you know, in the beginning, nutrition was done a lot by dentists, and I just wanted people to know that.
Yeah, and so I know Standard Process is an interesting company. They definitely have a lot of things available that sometimes are a little bit hard to find, such as glandulars.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably know quite a bit of those. How were those developed, and how have you seen them work in terms of patient care?
Glandulars is they call them that, where they actually call it a protomorphogen. And they again, I'm not, I don't work for Standard Process. I'm not getting anything for this. I just use them because I know that the products work. But they have specific organ systems, say if it's a pituitary or a hypothalamus or a liver or a lung, and they take that specific tissue and they have some specific process that they do where they're able to, and again, I don't know if it's breaking it down, but they're able to take that tissue and put it into more of a RNA type of, you know, cellular structure. And so by consuming that, what it does is it does two things. One is it allows the body to heal that organ, because many times if you have, you know, let's say an autoimmune issue where the body's attacking a specific portion of that person's body, you know, let's say it's lung. And so if you take a protomorphogen of lung, what's going to happen is that the body's going to use its defenses against that instead of attacking the lung, so it'll actually be able to heal the lung. And again, I don't claim to cure any disease. That's not what I'm talking about here. But I've just seen things like that happen too many times to not believe it. And again, I don't have all the small nuts and bolts about it. I just know clinically what to do, when to do it, and how to do it.
Well, I've used those that line myself with many patients, and I feel it's particularly useful to help short term. I don't usually use them long term, but for instance, if people are experiencing a lot of fatigue, and through various testing modalities, such as cortisol analysis, et cetera, we find that in fact they're having adrenal insufficiency of some kind. Mm-hmm. I'll find that using, along with other things, the adrenal glandulars really seems to help kickstart their path towards wellness.
It really does. And, you know, as you said, it works short term. There's also cytosol extracts that are a different version of that can be used for more long term things. But it's the type of thing where, and I've learned in practice, you know, and you probably know this with patients too, that anything can cause anything. And so looking at each person individually and seeing where they're misguiding themselves, because a lot of docs look at just what they're going to give the patient. They don't look at, okay, what are they eating? Exactly, you know, what are they eating? Keeping a very strict outline of that. They don't look at, is their gut functioning properly so they can digest the food? Are they eliminating properly so they can get rid of waste? Are they getting enough sleep? Are they doing a little bit of exercise? I mean, there's a whole handful of things that I work through to see, okay, are they doing all these things to move forward? Because many times you can get some progress by doing one or two, but if you do many of them, you're going to get much more progress.
That's true. Let's put it together. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's always going to be involved with various things, various practices that they can choose, such as forgiving those who you're mad at. That's a really interesting thought in terms of our
Absolutely.
New Year's show today. Like looking back on what kind of interactions you had. You think someone did something bad to you. Maybe they did. You know, people do wrong things to other people. But yet very many studies, some that are recently published, have found that by focusing on what that person did to you that you feel is bad actually hurts you more than it hurts them.
Oh, absolutely. It your sympathetic nervous system takes you right back to that situation. And, I mean, I try to teach this with food as well with people because I'm always getting asked, okay, if I need to stop eating sugar, what can I put in its place? Can I put, you know, stevia or honey or something? And I say, well, no, for quite a while, I don't want you eating anything even sweet because what happens is I believe that there's a cellular memory. And whether it's stress-induced or food-induced or smell-induced, it's going to bring back specific sensations and specific thoughts and specific things that occur around that. And so I can even eat just a little bit of maple syrup that will be so sweet for me that my body will go back into almost a hypoglycemic situation when, in fact, there's no way that it could have because I didn't eat enough to actually do it. And so that goes back from years ago, you know, when I was a kid and I didn't have very good eating habits and I had extremely bad hypoglycemia. And so people have to understand that those memories that you're talking about and those stresses play a big part in that.
Yeah, that's true. So that's very interesting. So if you even taste something sweet, even though it's not something that necessarily spikes the glycemic index on mm-hmm. a physically measurable level, just that cellular memory of the sweet taste can put you back into a particular syndrome that perhaps you're trying to escape.
Sure, and my big one as a child was dairy. My mother thought she was doing really well for us, and my brother and sister and I would drink 11 gallons of milk a week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I had tubes in my ears. I had chronic sinusitis, chronic sinus infections, ear infections. And when I got into chiropractic school, I realized that I could have had a milk allergy, and I quit milk, and all my sinus problems went away. Yeah, milk and cheese. Butter's okay. And so I had to stay away from milk and cheese for 5 years before it didn't affect me. Because I would go for a couple months, 3 months, and I would have just a little bit of cheese, and within 5 seconds, my nose would start to pour. And so I would test it every once in a while, and then finally I said, I'm going to stop, and I stopped. And it was around the five-year mark I decided to try some good hard-aged cheeses, and it didn't affect me. But if I have it 2 or 3 days in a row, my nose will start to run again.
I have heard similar stories. So we're going to take a little break right here, Dr. Art, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion. I want you to know, listeners, that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. One of the wonderful things about Progressive Radio Network is you can come back and listen anytime because the shows are on the archive 24/7. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to more right here on our first show for the year on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We bring you the show every week on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And we archive these shows as well, which means you can come to PRN.FM anytime, day or night, and then click Shows, scroll down to N for Natural Nurse, and click on that, and you'll see all of the shows. We actually have over 200 shows archived here. Dr. Zamprun and I have been doing radio in holistic medicine since 1989, so we actually have many thousands of archived shows, but there are 200 right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can search for topics that you might be interested in and just peruse them. They're also listed by month and year, so you might want to go, oh, I wonder what shows are there in October of 2010, and you can open that and read all the wonderful show descriptions on pretty much every aspect in natural medicine, since that's what Dr. Z and I really focus on. If you visit the website, naturalnurse.com, you'll see all the exciting trips and lectures that we have. For example, we have online classes where you can get CEU certification if you are a professional, and those are in classes in medicine making, going outside and gathering plants, botanical pharmacology, where we're actually looking at the chemical constituents of herbal medicine and how it works on a cellular level, or even something more spiritual like the use of herbs in ritual. So really the topic is for you to choose. We have lots of on-ground classes going on in Florida for the winter, and in New York and Connecticut in the summer, and daily online classes. We also have yearly trips. We have Echo Tours for Cures to Jamaica. You can find that at Echo Tours for Cures. And we're actually signed up now to go the first week in March. I believe March 12th we're leaving. We've already had some of the preliminary meetings, but we still have room for more people to join us. And on that trip, we actually live with shamanic healers in Jamaica for a week. And it's really what we call an education vacation, and there are also college credits available for joining us on that trip as well. This will be, I think, our 26th year of taking a group there to study with the shamanic healers. So all kinds of interesting things are constantly going on. You can check out our books at naturalnurse.com under books. We wrote the Arthritis Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, which is used as a textbook in many schools, as a matter of fact, on how do we get into an anti-inflammatory mode, and lots of other information for you right there. Today we have as our guest Dr. Art Caporald. I hope I said your name right, Dr. Caporald, Dr. Art.
That's very good. He is the president
of Concepts for Health, and as a health and healing expert, teacher, and lecturer with over 23 years of clinical experience. And he's sharing with us today his thoughts on natural medicine. And as we move forward in today's show, Dr. Art, I know you have so many topics available, but why don't we focus on weight loss? Because, you know, this is the first show of the year, and that's so many people make that their New Year's resolution.
Absolutely. So, there's a misnomer about what actually causes weight, at least what I've found in my practice with my patients. And I was speaking about my situation with hypoglycemia as a child, and what I found is that, it all stems from food, but it's what people do on a daily basis over the course of time that causes a problem. So, you know, let me talk about a typical day in somebody's diet. They'll wake up in the morning and they'll have a bowl of cereal, and or they'll have a bagel, or they'll have some toast, and they'll have coffee with sugar in it or tea with sugar in it, and that will spike their blood sugar. And then they'll drop back down. The blood sugar will drop back down into a hypoglycemic state usually, and that's where the mid-morning snack comes in, and they'll go and they'll get a muffin or they'll get some high-carbohydrate food to pick them back up again. And then for lunch, they'll have lunch and they'll have bread and they'll have some other things, probably a sugary drink, which is going to spike their blood sugar. And then it's going to drop down, and that's when they're going to get the 2:30, 3 o'clock sensation of wanting coffee or something sweet, and so they'll fulfill that. And then they'll come home and they'll have dinner, and again, there will be a high-starch food, not a lot of vegetables, and it's going to spike their blood sugar. And then they're going to have some type of dessert, maybe ice cream or something in the evening, that's also going to spike their blood sugar. Well, every time their blood sugar spikes, the body can only use so much of that sugar. And so everything that's not used is stored as fat. And so even though it's a very small amount, if you're doing that 4, 5, 6 times a day, over the course of time, you're going to start to gain weight. And what happens is people usually come in and they want a quick fix. They want to get rid of 20 pounds now, or they want to get rid of 40 pounds now. And it's taken them years and years and years to gain that weight. And so what they will do is they will try to diet, and they will starve themselves of all nutrients and protein and everything that they need. And they'll lose some weight pretty quickly. But in the beginning, in the first week or so, when somebody loses, say, 4 pounds or 5 pounds or 6 pounds in 1 week, that's all water weight. And it's because they've cut the foods out that they're sensitive to. I call it sensitive because they're not really allergic, but they become sensitive to those foods.
You think sensitive is just a more accurate explanation rather than going all the way to an allergy?
Well, yeah, because I use allergy like, my son's got a peanut allergy. He has to have an EpiPen, where I didn't really have an allergy to milk. I call it more of a sensitivity because there's some, you know, again, being a chiropractor, not a medical doctor, I have to watch my verbiage. So I would call it a sensitivity. But, you know, somebody would come in and they say, you know, I've lost all this weight. It's great. I said, yeah, it's just water weight. It's going to slow down, and eventually you're going to get to maybe 1 to 2 pounds a month, and that's what I'm happy with, because then you're maintaining your muscle mass, but you're only losing fat. And you can use that as a gauge as well, because if they go to a wedding one weekend and they eat all the things they're not supposed to and they get on the scale the next day and they've gained 4 pounds in a weekend, you know that that's water weight as well. And so you have to look at those foods that they're eating on a regular basis to teach them what they're doing and how it's affecting their body. And that's actually what I'm an expert in. I'm an expert in getting people to take responsibility for their health by showing them the process and showing them how their body functions with those things.
Well, why do you think weight is such an issue for so many people? I mean, might not it be actually a healthier attitude to just go, okay, so I'm, you know, a little heavier, maybe I should just buy larger clothes instead of being so uncomfortable with oneself all the time?
Right. I'm not concerned about the number, and I never am concerned about the number, because I believe that excess weight is just a symptom, just like heart disease and, you know, all the arthritic pain and all the other symptoms that you can have. It's just a symptom of something not working right. And so I'm not looking for somebody to be model thin. I'm looking for somebody not to be obese and to be a comfortable weight that's comfortable for them, and making sure that everything's functioning properly. And so I've actually had people come in where they say, you know, I just want to lose 10 pounds, and they don't have 10 pounds to lose. And so those are the people that you have to reeducate and tell them, you know, you're going to gain a little bit of weight as you get older, but the trick is to make sure that you're still eating good food, nourishing the body so it can do its job properly, making sure that you're exercising and having an active lifestyle, and then that'll kind of fall into place on its own. But I see it all the time. I've had patients with me for years that they'll do well, and then they'll fall off the wagon for a little while, and they'll start on their process again, and then they have to call me, and we get them back on the wagon again. And, you know, and I say on the wagon because it's the standard American diet's pretty poor in this country.
Well, in what ways? Expand on that a little bit, because I certainly agree.
Excuse me. The average person has, again, I'm not an anti-starch guy. Well, I actually am for my patients, because it's people eat breads and cakes and candies and cookies all the time throughout the day, and there's no nutritional value in those at all, as far as a whole food form. If you're grinding your own wheat, then maybe that's okay. But if you've developed a sensitivity to wheat from years of eating too much of it, then it's not going to be a good thing. And so trying to get people to eat mostly vegetables with a good amount of protein at their meals is really, really, really important. Breakfast, I always have people eat eggs, unless they have an egg sensitivity, and some type of protein. Because, again, most of the people that come to me, they have an underlying blood sugar issue that maybe they're not diabetic, but they're usually hypoglycemic, and we need to stabilize that so they stop those cravings, because the reason they get into those foods is because they have that low sugar crave. And so by preventing that and creating a long, slow-burning fuel so their blood sugar doesn't drop down, they're going to last a lot longer and not feel hungry. I mean, I eat breakfast at probably 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I can go almost until 3 or 4 without eating if I have to. I don't anymore, you know, but I can do that if I need to.
So what about, because this is something that people often ask me about, what happens if they are a vegan or a vegetarian and they don't want to eat animal protein?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just be honest with what I've seen. I can count the healthy vegetarians or vegans I've seen on one hand. It's a tremendous amount of work. And because most people substitute things that aren't good for them just to try to fill in food voids so they feel full, when in fact it's a lot of work. And the average person, when they create, I'm going to call it damage, or if they've got those sensitivities and if they've got the hypoglycemia, there's no way of getting around it. They're going to have some type of good animal fat or good fat, butter. Olive oil is okay. You know, there's all different kind of vegetable oils, too, as long as they're raw. And they're going to have some type of good animal protein because they're going to have to rebuild things that they've damaged in the past.
Yeah, many people don't understand all the micronutrient deficiencies that are caused, especially by a strict vegan diet.
Absolutely.
And that includes, most people are aware of B12, but it goes so far beyond B12, such as methionine, for example. Methionine is an amino acid that you really won't find in a vegan diet, and that's probably linked to the fact that many vegans get an elevated homocysteine, which actually is one of the indicators of pathological detoxification, meaning that your body is not breaking down toxins efficiently. And that's because you don't have enough methionine. That might be the limiting part of the detoxification pathway. There's many other micronutrients that can be missing as well. So it really is a long list of supplements that you have to use if you want to be a vegan. And what I do with patients who come in is if they are committed to be a vegan because that is their spiritual commitment, I will work with them and give them a list of all the things and test for them to look at those micronutrient deficiencies, and they're always severely deficient, and then see if they really want to do a whole bunch of supplementation, because if it's their spiritual focus, then they don't want to change it. But a lot of people are following a vegan lifestyle because they feel it is the healthiest way for them to go. And if that's their motivating factor, I often will talk them into using good quality animal protein.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how is food linked to behavior?
Well, I mentioned about thiamine, you know, earlier in the show. There is a book called Food and Behavior by a woman named Barbara Reed Stitt, and from she was a probation officer in Ohio, and she had some issues with food that she figured out were causing some health problems for her. And from 1970 to 1982, she started changing probationers' diets and lifestyle within the system. And what happened is over those 12 years, they had 5,000 men and women that fell out of the probation system and didn't go back into the system again. And she has many, many, many stories about people and how they were when they came into the system and when they would change their diet and their food intake and how they would change within that and realize what they were doing and get out of the system. And so I deal a lot with children. One of my very first patients, fortunately, was a fourth grade teacher. And he would start to see children that weren't doing well in school, or maybe they were struggling and not getting good grades. And he would talk to their parents, and they would bring him in. And every single time, if we would work with the kids, get the parents to take responsibility for what they have to make the child to eat, and do a little bit of supplementation, but not a whole lot, they would always go up at least 1 to 2 grade points. And so the limiting step with kids is always the parents, as I'm sure you've seen before in the past, that if the parents don't want to do the work for the child, it's not going to happen. But kids,
yeah, and it, I always find that it has to be a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have special conditions for the kids, one child even especially, and then
absolutely,
a whole bunch of junk food in the house for everybody else.
Absolutely.
That's not happening. So
Yeah. Sometimes
when families do embark on healthier eating to help one child, they all get healthier because that's the side effects of what you're recommending. There's no downside.
Right. Absolutely. And I would actually give a family, you know, a family price for care because I wanted everybody involved. And so I would, there would be one fee for the one patient, and then everybody else would be dramatically reduced just so everybody could be on board and make sure everybody was moving forward properly.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So now, you know, you found someone perhaps feeling less depressed because they think they're going on this healthy eating kick for weight loss, but all these positive effects happen, such as better mood,
mm-hmm.
more energy, and that's why healthy weight loss, you know, is so important. How do you feel about the massive move, and now it's even on TV commercials, about just getting, you know, a bariatric surgery to deal with being overweight?
Yeah, it's interesting. I live in a very small town, and when I had one woman that was going to come be a patient of mine, and she opted out of that because she didn't want to make the dietary changes and do those things. And a couple years later, I saw her, and she had lost a whole lot of weight. And come to find out, she had bariatric surgery and had to make dietary changes because she had the surgery. But what happens is many times the people end up not making those changes, and they end up going and having all kinds of problems. That, coupled with the fact that they're losing, you mentioned micronutrients earlier, that they have extreme deficiency issues at that point. I'm not an expert in bypass surgery or all that, but there's specific functions of each part of the body. And when we start cutting them out, we really don't know what's going to happen. And so are they digesting their food properly? Is it moving into the small intestine at the right pH so it can actually be neutralized? And I mean, there's a whole barrage of things that actually have to occur. And so I recommend, again, I'm pretty conservative when it comes to that, starting with the easiest thing first, working through. I mean, once you do surgery, you can't go back. And so making a person understand that, you know, it's like a young kid wanting to get a tattoo. Well, that's great when you're 18, but if you're 40 years old, maybe I don't want, you know, Betty Boop on my arm anymore.
Right, you can't just turn it around.
Right.
Well, the thing is that although it is quite effective for most people in terms of weight loss when they have bariatric surgery, there's a myriad of complications, including death, by the way.
Yeah.
And other things happen, like micronutrient, again, we're back to them, deficiencies, which are marked. For instance, the B vitamins, which you discussed earlier, and also iron, often become deficient to where they have to actually get regular injections and IVs.
Right.
Because they can no longer process. And, you know, you're actually taking out your stomach. And, you know that your stomach has all these other enzymes and cofactors and actually creates our vitamins. That's one of its natural activities. So
right.
I think that surgery, as always, should be a last-ditch effort, but they seem to be promoting it like this, like it's a fast, easy, quick way to lose weight. The other thing is once the surgery is completed, the individual has to, guess what, change their diet and
right.
exercise protocol. So if they had just done that from the get-go, they wouldn't have needed the surgery. So it's really, I just think, being overhyped and overused.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, this is what my limiting step is, and it's probably yours too, I would imagine, is that we have a whole, you know, if we're trying to educate patients, we have to go against a lot of things that they're being shown through advertisements and what's being in the news and all this. And so teaching people what really creates health takes a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of work. And the average person just wants a quick fix. And unfortunately, that's the state of most people. My wife gets so frustrated because she sees things that are occurring, and she always says, "Why don't they understand?" And well, they're just not there yet. You know, you mentioned about when somebody stabilizes their blood sugar and they become less depressed. Well, I found that it actually shifts people's consciousness. The healthier they get, their consciousness starts to shift, and they start to shift other things in their life as well. And I've seen that happen many, many, many times. But they're not in a space, consciousness space yet, to be able to observe that, but once they get past it, they are. And so it's the pain and suffering that goes on with what people do to themselves and not knowing, or knowing and not caring, are the thing that saddens me the most, because many of the problems can be avoided altogether.
That's true. But, you know, to say it could have been avoided in the first place, you know, okay, so if they come into you, do you find that most people who come into you, it's, you know, about pain or about nutrition or about, you know, weight loss? Like, what's the biggest draw
right.
for people to come to see a doctor like you?
I have, I'm mostly referral now. I don't hardly get any patients just coming in. People have referred me, you know, referred somebody to me because they've gotten results. Occasionally, I mean, I used to have chiropractors that would refer their patients to me to figure out why this specific spinal problem wasn't getting better. And once we figured out, I'd send them back and they would continue with their care. But it's when you have the referral from somebody that's gotten results, it takes a lot of the problem out of it about them understanding what they have to do. If they just come in off the street, it's a lot more work on my part to be able to move them in that direction. But again, I don't change for each specific patient. Each patient has to go through the same process, the same workup, the same consultation, everything, because I'm not cutting corners just because, say, they have pain in their shoulder or they have only a pain syndrome here, when somebody else has a blood sugar issue or a diabetes issue. They get all exactly the same workup.
So you're saying that everybody, because you want a good baseline, and then you'll focus on what their individual needs might be.
Absolutely, yes. Just like if they have a blood sugar issue, I'm not just going to focus on blood sugar. I'm going to focus on everything, because there can be other things correlating with that as well.
Well, if they have blood sugar, they're probably elevation or even dysregulation, they're probably going to have inflammation, and that's really linked to every degenerative illness.
Absolutely, and then they're going to have a liver issue, and I mean, it just compounds. And so you have to look at each person individually and see what their diet and lifestyle is doing and what their needs are through their testing, and go from there.
Well, that sounds great. So we're coming, you know, very close to the end of our show today, Dr. Arthur. So why don't you just tell our listeners the best way to get in touch with you and give them some kind of New Year's message for motivation.
Absolutely. So the best way to get in touch with me is via phone, and that number is 559-475-8611, or you can email me at drart@conceptsforhealth.com. That's forhealth.com. And my website is conceptsforhealth.com. And I'd like to leave people with letting them know that they can be in charge of as healthy as they want to. They can make choices that move them in the direction of health or move them away from the direction of health. What I do with people is I like them to look 20 or 30 years down the road and see people. I'm 51. I look at people at 80 and 90 years old, and I see how they're acting and what their health is, and I make the choices depending on how I want to be at that age. And so look in the future and see how do you want to be when you're 80 years old? How do you want to be when you're 90 years old? Do you want to be in a wheelchair? Do you want to be functional? Do you want to be outgoing and have a good time and enjoying life, or do you want to be stuck in a bed? And so those are the things that you have to look at to make the choices now for the future.
So true. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And listeners, we love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-829-0918. Visit us online at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or go to naturalnurse.com to find out lots of information about our classes, workshops, radio shows, TV appearances, and all the things that myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, as part of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, we're hoping that you stay well, and as always, wishing that you stay healthy.